Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Listening to the campus and community radio station broadcasting from Burnaby on the unceded Coast Salish territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations. My name is Nicole Hines, and I'm excited to introduce my first guest for Beats and Eats. Today, I'm chatting with Aiden Silzer Hooker, founder of Front Yard Farms. Front Yard Farms is a Vancouver-based edible landscaping business that transforms your yard into a food oasis. And you know I talk about food on this show, so I'm really, really excited to get into a conversation. They convert any unused space into an organic food garden at commercial buildings, residential homes, strata complexes, rooftops, or even boulevards. So I want to thank you so much for joining me today, Aiden. How are you?
Of course. Thank you so much for that amazing introduction. And it's awesome to be here. I'm looking forward to kind of getting to share about Front Yard Farms and my experience and how we all got going and kind of where we're headed next. So yeah, thank you.
Absolutely. And let's just segue into that first question here is, can you share a bit more about Front Yard Farms, right, to the listeners? Yeah. Like they, you know, I want them to know all about what you guys do.
Yeah, so we've been going on for about 5 years now, and the inspiration actually came from my time studying at Kwantlen Polytechnic University, where I was studying horticulture. But I got on to urban farming through a couple of really cool courses. One was organic crop production, and then another one was urban agriculture. Mm-hmm. And that kind of led me down a path of wanting to figure out how to make cities more sustainable, and figure out how to bring food back into cities, right? So that was kind of the beginning, right, of Front Yard Farms. But what we do now and over the last 5 years is we really assist people in any way possible with how to grow food. And so it doesn't have to just be a small space in a yard. It can also be a larger commercial building. It can be anywhere, right? It can be a community garden, right? We're more of, when it comes down to it, educators. Mm-hmm. And we kind of fit into any slot that people need us to. I have a background in landscaping as well. And so a lot of our installs are raised garden beds. They have patios and pergolas. So they're actually not only just edible, but they're also gorgeous, right? They look good, right? They're functional spaces. And that's what we've seen is people wanting to have a yard that they can go and enjoy, and it's pollinator friendly. And it's gorgeous to their visuals, right? But then also they can get food from it, right? It's a pretty good trade-off. So that's basically what Front Yard Farms does.
Yes.
And yeah, I'll explain more, but I'll move on. Yeah.
Yeah. So I do have a question though. Because I didn't do enough research, I have to be honest, when it comes to what you can grow on your front yard, for example, right? Mm-hmm. So are edibles allowed, like actual like things that you can eat? Is it only like on the herb end? You know, how does that work?
Yeah. So you're actually, this is kind of why I started Front Yard Farms, was I was kind of asking these questions when I was finishing up, because my major in university was urban ecosystems. And so it's obviously very centered around how an urban ecosystem works and functions.
Right.
And I figured out that you can grow food in your yard and you can grow anything you want, you know, barring it being actually illegal per se, right?
Fair.
In certain cases or certain amounts.
Yeah.
But you can grow anything, right? So you can grow, you know, brassicas, so cabbage and broccoli and Brussels sprouts, or you can grow tomatoes, you can grow anything. Okay. And in our installs, that's what we kind of try. We have that biodiversity, right? So we're planting native edible plants, right? We're planting fruit trees, berry shrubs, all that kind of stuff, right? All the way down to annuals.
Okay.
And the city of Vancouver, actually, and Metro Vancouver more so, they want people to be growing food, right? Okay. So they actually, they're okay if you use the boulevard to grow food, or certain areas that are being unused in your neighborhood, right? Corners where you just have grass, or, you know, just a fire hydrant set up there. You are actually allowed to grow there. It's just more about management, just like in your own yard, right? The city is a little bit more strict with, you can't just have a boulevard garden that's, you know, 6 feet high and not being taken care of. Like, you have to water it and take care of it yourself. But yeah, you can grow anything you want. And that's kind of a very cool thing that I learned all those years ago, is I just wondered why more people aren't growing, especially in this climate, where you can grow year round, and why we aren't growing more food here. So yeah, to answer your question, we can grow whatever we want here, other than illegal substances.
I feel you. And okay, so you kind of talked about how Front Yard Farms got started, but why do you feel that there is a need for the work that you do? And we'll get into the services and stuff like that next. But why do you? I mean, I know why for me personally, but I'm curious as someone who's a founder, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's the kind of thing is as all businesses do, they kind of morph as we go, and I was working in the landscape industry when I started this, and I just kind of was like, we should just grow more food. That's just a simple thing. And then leaning back on my studies, I remembered food insecurity and food sovereignty and all these kinds of, you know, big words that I'm like, what does that actually mean? Like, what are we, like where can it be applied?
Yes.
And so I've been kind of trying to, walk two lines, where one, Front Yard Farms is more of a landscape and gardening company that does food gardens. But also I'm like, how can I use my growing skills to get more involved with people that don't know how to grow and don't have access necessarily to the kind of really nice produce, right? Like, not everybody owns properties. It's expensive here, right? So that's kind of what I'm working towards now is for one, helping people set up their yard in a way where they're donating a lot of it. So I have a couple clients over the years have big properties. One of them was actually out in White Rock.
Okay.
And they were just giving away to their neighbors, to food banks. Right. Yeah. So like they were a little farm at that point. Right. Yeah. And so that's kind of the idea of taking kind of up like a private plot is hoping that and knowing that with our skills, we can set these people up so they will have more and then they have to go, well, we have all these, you know, boxes of food that we have to take somewhere. So that's kind of where on that side of it, right, where we're giving back through that way. Yeah. But then I'm also always looking for, and actually had a small community supported agriculture program going.
Okay.
Where so I had a farmer come to me and just say, love what you're doing in the urban farming, but I have a plot of land, like just a small little plot, and it was actually in Maple Ridge. Mm-hmm. And you can grow on it if you want. And so I used it just in more of like a volunteer basis, where I just put money in from Front Yard Farms to like set it up, and I just gave everything away. Because I was like, that's kind of what I would want to do is figure out ways to, have more people approaching me and saying, I have a chunk of land here or a rooftop there or a backyard garden here. And I would love to grow it for donations or that kind of stuff. Right. So really getting more involved with food security specifically. There's other programs in Vancouver. The Food Stash Foundation is really good. They do like a food rescue. So that's also a huge one. And then the Harvest Project in North Vancouver, where they're always looking for partners to help the people that come to them for help, right? And so that's what I'm trying to do is those two lanes, where whenever we're doing a landscaping install, we're going to do it in a way where it can produce as much as possible, so that homeowner is basically, you know, it's mandatory that it's going to be given away. And then also going down that lane of more urban agriculture to make it completely free, right? And to actually be able to just hand out to people who don't have that kind of access.
I love it. Now we're going to segue a bit into the services that you actually offer, because, you know, just talking about that initiative, it's so great. Like, I lived in Calgary for a while, and they had this program where people who had like lawns and or property with like areas to grow, but didn't have the time to do it, would then match with somebody who wanted to grow. And so there was like this app, and then, you know, people could get connected with people who had plots and that type of thing.
Yes.
So I love that initiative, but at the same time, I would love, like, what if I were to look you guys up on the interwebs, what kind of services would I find out that is offered?
Yeah, so I guess like the most straightforward way to answer that is again, we go back to we're a foodscaping company, right? So if you go on there, you'll find that first you can contact us and we'll meet with you and see what your needs are. But if you are a property owner, for example, or even if you're renting and you're allowed to do something to your space, the services we offer, basically we design the whole aspect of everything, right? We handle all the designs, the drawings, the plant layouts and everything. And then we do the install itself, right? So we are a landscaping company in that way where we can actually do all the work. And then we actually offer maintenance as well. So that's the other kind of cool thing about Front Yard Farms is technically there are ways that we can manage it for you. A lot of people say you can use the space, obviously, and we don't have time, right? And you're the experts, and you'll be able to grow way more than we will. And so it's just like somebody coming to mow your lawn or trim your hedges or whatever, but instead it's food, right? And so it's the same kind of thing when people say like, oh, how would maintenance work of a food garden? Just think of it as a lawn, right? It's the same thing, right? You're just coming once or twice a week, harvesting some tomatoes, harvesting some greens and leaving a little box. So I don't know if you know like the CSA programs, the community supported agriculture programs. It's basically a contract that goes right from, from me, for example, to a farm that's local, and I pay them directly and they send boxes weekly to me from the farm. So it kind of skips the farmer's market, the grocery store, just goes straight to consumer. And that's kind of what this is, right? Where people can walk out and they have their own little farm growing out there, right? So just to be very general, yeah, we design, install, and maintain food gardens all over the Lower Mainland. And then the other thing that we do is education. So a lot of clients, I've had a couple of meetings over the last couple of weeks, and they're like, I'm excited to learn how to grow, and I want to grow on my own, and I want to do this moving forward. And so we involve them in the installation, right? We don't just shove them to the side and do the whole thing and then walk away. We kind of hold their hand and show them what we're doing and why we're doing it. And then at the end, we actually teach them, right? Companion planting and crop rotations and where to move everything throughout the years, right? And kind of give them a starting point. And then just we if we get contacted by somebody, we just do one-on-one personal farmer meetings as well, right? So if somebody says, I have a garden space, I had aphids or I had a potato flea beetle, I had whatever. Can you come help me and have a little hour meeting? Tell me what I should move or why this is not growing or what. So kind of using our expertise that way. And so it's kind of a multi-tiered kind of service level where not everybody is going to need the big install. Some people already have a planter or a space to grow, and we want to be able to kind of access everybody and kind of cover as much ground with the knowledge that we have as possible.
Love it. I love it. And another question that I just have that just popped into my head is especially because of the education component, what organizations have you aligned with or collaborated with lately? You know what I mean? To kind of sort of get that education out
Well,
there.
so over the years, it's actually been, and this is why it's awesome to be speaking with you, because over the years, it's been a lot of garden clubs and libraries and just, and honestly, just meeting people during installs. Like if I'm working in a neighborhood, people are strolling by and I'm chatting with people and sharing what's going on here, because it looks a little bit different than normal landscaping. But what I've tried to do is like I'm pretty forward, and so I'm just sending emails to other landscaping companies, landscape architecture firms, development companies, even home builders, and just saying what we're doing and trying to collaborate in a way of saying, hey, you're building this new home. Have you thought about doing a food garden, right? Like that's kind of like we kind of have to cold call people because, or cold email, I guess, as it were, because people don't really know
Don't know.
that this is even an option, right? Like I've had so many clients that said to me, I didn't know I could grow food, not
That's
even if it wasn't allowed or anything, but they just said, I just didn't, that just didn't crop. Like I had grass when I was growing up, we had hedges, a couple of trees, and that was that. So it's like, I'm bringing kind of, we as Front Yard Farms is bringing new ideas to people,
right.
that just, and so that's kind of the biggest part is just reaching those people,
Absolutely.
and getting a platform even to kind of be like, this is an option, right?
Absolutely.
Imagine if you had your space to go and, you're going to go outside and hang out and maybe you have kids, whatever it is, and you go and you can pick, apples off the fruit. It's
Right.
like, why would you not want to do that, right? It's such a
100%.
beneficial, activity, and it's so, kind of like fundamental too for people to be growing food and involved in their food production. And that's what I found is like the enjoyment that I get, you know, that's one of like the big aspects of doing this work is literally like taking, you know, you see this tiny seed grow to this big plant and then you're actually, you know, getting sustenance, getting food from it. Yeah, sorry, I went off on a tangent there.
No, I love it. No, this is incredible.
Yeah, the connections are more so like I'm trying to kind of access like a bigger audience in that way. And so I have a couple friends who are landscape architects, and so they have their own firms. And so that's kind of who I've been trying to kind of push and say, you know, talk to the developers, get community gardens going and all that kind of stuff. Because, again, like Frontyard Farms is boutique. It's small. And so we're trying to always expand and trying to, find somewhere that's really going to springboard into something big. You know, like really getting food into the city. But
yeah, and I think it's just the fact, I mean, like I said, when the we just talked about it, I had no idea that you can grow food. You know what I mean? Like, I think many citizens don't realize that we can do that. And I think that once people are a bit more aware, it could actually spread like, you know what I mean? Like a week.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting too, like again, food is so like, it, you know, we use a lot of things in our day, right? You know, whatever it is, a laptop, a phone, a car, technology and that. But it's like most people eat multiple meals every day.
Period.
And we're so disconnected from our food. And so it really comes down to it that like we should be allowed to grow our own food, right? Absolutely. Because that makes it so we can control our own destiny, control who we are and what we grow. And we can. And so that's why we should. There's a movement called guerrilla gardening.
Okay.
Which is, basically just finding places that, whether it's the city or whoever doesn't know, and just kind of throwing wildflowers down or setting up a little food garden, right? And just kind of letting it naturalize and become wild on its own. Yeah, and it's really cool because it's people saying, like, we're allowed to do this and we should be doing this. And the city can be, you know, like, certain times they can be a little bit restrictive. And so it's like, oh, like these wildflower seeds fell out of my pocket. Oops, right? So,
exactly.
Rewilding the city a little bit.
Absolutely.
So, yeah.
And then it's oops, I did it again. And oops, I did
exactly.
it again. Anyways.
Yep, yeah. It was a long walk. Yeah.
100%.
Yeah.
All right. As I start to wind it down, my question for you is, would you say the future of Front Yard Farms is like, what would you love to see, your business move to evolve
completely? I think, from everything I've just been saying over the last like 25 minutes or so, it's always changing, right? And it's always morphing into something new every year. And that's kind of the fun part about it. But my hope and my goal, I think now that I've kind of, really honed in on what that is continuing to grow food in people's yards, right? That's an easy walk through a neighborhood. You're like lawn, right? That's an easy one, right? People should be, if they can, get rid of their lawns, or even just expand their garden and start growing some food there, right? That's just, and we want to make sure that we're available to do that.
Yeah.
But the big one is, think about Burnaby or Vancouver or any really city in the Metro Van area. Everybody is moving into buildings and high rises and even townhome complexes. And this is why I'm really going after that kind of sector, because they should all have community gardens or food gardens, or they should all have some kind of access where, I don't know if you've ever lived in an apartment, but I'm sure like I've heard all these stories about people feeling very isolated and alone because you're on top of each other and all stacked in. And you can imagine having a rooftop where you can go and there's greenery up there and there's community, right? And you can host dinners, you can do all this stuff, right? And so that's kind of the next step for Front Yard Farms is moving really into, pressing developers and these landscape architecture firms to find a way to get food gardens into their designs and finally their developments.
Yes.
And then have that be kind of a maintenance strategy and a maintenance project moving forward, right? So make it a norm to be, well, of course we have 35 plots plus an eating area to again, not only grow food, but to have community and bring people together in a building commonly not known for that kind of stuff, right?
Absolutely.
So those kind of two aspects, right? The more I would say almost corporate side of trying to get people who wouldn't have thought about this before to kind of make a change and and do it that way. And then also just helping anybody who says, I have a, whether it's one planter or, you know, or an acreage, it's, you know, we can come and help with that too. So
I love it. And if I would also add, when it, conversations with the developers, is that, not to sleep on balconies, because I think that there is a lot of, imagine they built in like, you know, areas where you could automatically start a herb garden. Right.
Yes.
Like it's kind of like built into the balcony, for example. You know, so I could see that as if they can't do a rooftop, then I mean, there are many buildings that are still building balconies. And I think there's a great opportunity there as well.
Yeah. And that's, it's funny because again, coming from the landscape industry, I worked at a lot of high rises down in Vancouver. And like there's a ton of space. Like I've seen these rooftops. I've seen the gardens they're working with. And I'm like, this full sun all day, right? Like you could grow immense amounts of produce there. So, and that's kind of really what it is, right? Is it's not going to be an overnight change and not, you know, some buildings just don't have it. Okay, like we can try to retrofit, use balconies like you're saying, and that's all good, but it's just small changes, right? It's like a community garden at a building, especially with Vancouver and Metro Vancouver more broadly tightening down on green roof spaces and saying now, instead of just green blue infrastructure and green roofs and sedums and kind of drought tolerant plants, we might have to do more and have maybe tree cover and actual food up there. So as this moves, I think we're going to see that change. And as people care more about where their food comes from, what's it grown in, what's been sprayed on it, right? We're going to see that change more and more. So
I love it. Aiden, I want to thank you so much for joining me today and having this conversation. Before I let you go, please let us know, how can we find you online?
So it's all, if you look up frontyardfarms.ca, that's our website, and you can find tons of information on there. You can contact us through there as well. But then on Instagram, it's Front Yard Farms BC, as in British Columbia. And you can find all the email and all the access on there to contact us. And yeah, please follow along and contact us if you need us.
Absolutely. And I will ensure that I put those links in the show notes as well. So just in case you didn't have a pen or anything, don't stress, don't fret. You'll have the information to get connected. Aiden, again, thank you so much for chatting with me today. I appreciate your time. And all the success ahead for you guys. I love it.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. And you've been tuned into CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, broadcasting from the unceded Coast Salish territory.
You can deny all the things I've seen, all the things I've discovered, but not for much longer. Because too many others know what's happening out there.
I want to believe.
Hi, this is David Duchovny, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 Burnaby.
This is Bird Note. Male birds give it their all to get a female's attention during the breeding season. Some males sing, and some build intricate nests. But then there's the magnificent frigate bird. Magnificent frigate birds are huge, gangly seabirds found around the warm waters of the southern U.S. and all the way down to Brazil. They often nest in large colonies, building nests out of sticks in the trees and shrubs. When it comes time to mate, the jet black males perch in groups of up to 30 at a time. Displaying side by side, each male inflates the skin of his bright red throat pouch, which swells into an immense elongated heart shape below his long, slender beak. Then the male rattles his bill, drumming it briskly against the huge red balloon of his pouch. The result is a crazy, jazzy mix of drums and clicks. As they drum, the males also wave their heads, quiver their wings, and screech a bit. And then they really step it up when a female glides overhead. When a suitably impressed female lands beside a male, the two will shake their heads in rhythm, clack their bills together, and intertwine their necks. A perfect ending. But just the start of raising a family. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Hello, this is Matthew with CJSF Radio 90.1 FM. I am doing an interview with Bo Shi Yang of the Conference Board of Canada. We're going to talk about a recent op-ed that she wrote for the Globe and Mail, where she discussed a little bit of the educational issues going on, particularly with regard to higher education. Thank you so much for joining us, Bo Shi.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, so the first thing that I want to ask you about is, in your article, you talk about how, and I quote here, for every public dollar spent training a trade student, governments recoup roughly $9 in future tax revenue, and for a computer science degree, returns about 6 to 1. So I think that that's a good place for us to start talking about the economic concept of externality, as I think it might help some of our audience members kind of think about and understand what you're saying. Because in some ways, as I was reading this, it seemed like you are seeing almost a negative externality in the way that people are going into certain degrees and in certain field choices. Is that kind of true?
I wouldn't coin it as the negative externality. So basically, the whole piece of that op-ed is coined in the term ROI, which is return on investment. And typically, when we talk about return on investment, I'm sure our business graduates or business students have a better idea of what that means. But basically, it means if I invest in $1, how much would I get back in return, right? So it's a business term. In this context, though, this is the first of its kind research in Canada that does the return on investment research on higher education. And what I meant is that from a fiscal perspective, because our higher education system, a lot of the revenue for SFU, for UBC, for all of these universities and colleges are invested by provincial government. Right. So when provincial government is trying to put their physical funding into post-secondary education, a question that they might ask is, OK, so if I give you this bunch of money, what kind of value do I get? Right. Is this a kind of a cost, or is it kind of an investment? Right. So basically, our research finds that actually the return on this public investment in higher education is quite high. And although it's quite a robust public investment overall, like you said, the returns actually vary very sharply by fields and credentials. And like you said, when it comes to skilled trades and engineering and STEM major, and in a lot of cases in healthcare major, this return on investment is quite high because the labor market needs a lot of these talents, skilled talent, and they pay them well. And when the graduates earn more income in their future, like after they graduated from their training, over a lifetime, that's a lot of tax payable that's going back to the provincial and federal government. And that's how we calculated or estimated the ROI. But like you said, comparatively, there are some majors or fields of studies that doesn't have as high in ROI as high demand field that I just talked about. And that could be like humanities, social science, education, so on and so forth. So yeah, like you said, the returns vary very sharply across different fields of study.
That's totally fair. So I'm curious then, do you think that changing the relative costs of these educational fields would be useful? So for instance, do you think policymakers should increase the cost of less in-demand degrees, like you mentioned, social sciences, and then use that to subsidize some of the more desired and in-demand degrees and trades through maybe a transfer?
If by cost you mean the tuition, I'm not too sure. I think that tuition, there's a tuition cap on almost every field of study. And I feel like it's kind of unfair for students who really love these majors. For example, if someone's really passionate about social science or humanity majors, it's kind of unfair for them to bear the cost of this low ROI, you know, outcome. But I do think from this research, we concluded that